Neil, you ever feel like having a podcast is kind of like running a small business?
It's exactly like running a small business.
It is exactly like running a small business.
I don't know who's the boss, you know. Speaking of who's the boss, we had Tony Danza on this podcast one time.
Wow.
But anyway, but no, it is. I mean, we've got, you know, things we've got to do. We've got deadlines, it's very much like a
absolutely.
Small business. We've got promotion, all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
So,
well, you know,
why are you asking me this question?
Well, it's actually very fortunate you should say that, because it just so happens that this episode of Unprofessional Development is brought to you by Alberta Blue Cross. And they understand that running a small business is tough. And they also understand that
empathy
business owners
is so important. Okay. Finding someone that understands your issues is so important when you're looking for a healthcare provider.
Exactly right. And that's the thing. They're going to give you some peace of mind with a group benefit plan, because they offer things like health and dental and life and disability coverage for your employees, for the vast quantity of employees we have here at the Unprofessional Development Podcast Network.
Yes, I know.
Did I say podcast
Margin
network?
Accounting. I mean, you know, with her gout. So we definitely need to have some good coverage for her.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing is, I mean, you've already said it, Mila, like you're a busy guy. Right? You're pretty busy?
Very busy.
Yeah.
Very
so
busy.
The really great thing about the Alberta Blue Cross group benefits is that they're easy to manage, and you can do it anywhere, you can do it anytime, and you can do it on any device.
On any device?
On any device. At
my,
all.
My speak and spell from that I got from like
yes.
the ET set. That,
yes.
Can I use that?
Absolutely. Yeah. You could, you know, pick up like any piece of garbage in your house and just manage your healthcare, your group benefit plan.
That's fantastic.
It is amazing.
When I go to like late night visits to the fridge, what you doing? I'm managing my healthcare, Mrs. Mealy. Don't worry about it.
So, hey, if you want to learn more and you want to explore your options, you know where you can go? I'll bet you don't. I'm going to tell you. You can go to ab.bluecross.ca. I'm going to say it one more time. It's ab.bluecross.ca.
C-A. Okay.
Unprofessional Development is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network.
Welcome, unprofessionals, to a collaborative episode of Unprofessional Development. I am your co-host, Jane Lawrence, and it's just me, because this is kind of a different episode. We have decided that we're going to bring you a new show today. This is nothing normal. This is just a one-off, but you know, we here at Unprofessional Development Incorporated, we like to reach out. We like to build community. And we found this other great unprofessional podcast, and they're not associated with us in any way other than we have the same kind of approach in that they too are unprofessional. This is an episode of Unprofessional Engineering. And yeah, it's not specifically education, but you will certainly find it educational. They're going to be talking about the moon landing and how they got there. It's a pretty cool episode. A couple of great guys. If you like the show, you can follow them. They're on Twitter. It's at UnproEng. You can go to unprofessionalengineering.com to find all the links to all the stuff. And of course, you can find them on all the podcatchers. Give them a listen. If you like them, give them a subscribe. Tell them we sent you. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to Unprofessional Engineering. My name is James.
And you got Luke.
Luke, how did we get to the moon?
I can't believe we haven't done this one again.
No, we're the worst.
Like, so there's days where like we're trying to come up with topics and it's just like James and I are literally like yelling at each other, top of our lungs.
Top of our
You're
lungs.
You're an idiot. We did that before. We've
you
never done satellites.
Dumb.
Yeah. Yada, yada, yada. And then like this one, it's satellites. Like, how did we miss it?
I know.
How do we miss it? This is a good one.
Low-hanging fruit, they call it.
So I got a little bit of like history, like pre-moon landing stuff, like the what got us to the moon before we actually got to get to go.
That was a lot to digest there, so go ahead and do
those
the
my
got
words,
to get to going.
That was my word salad.
I like it.
Alrighty, so the moon landing on July 20th, 1969. Millions of people gathered around their televisions to watch.
I thought this was before
hold
we landed.
Hold on. To watch two U.S. astronauts do something no one's ever done before.
Well, you wrote that really well.
Wearing really bulky spacesuits and backpacks really of oxygen to breathe. Neil Armstrong and Edwin Buzz Aldrin became
How
the first
Buzz
human.
Out of Edwin?
It's probably a middle name is probably like that they, he doesn't like use, that he's afraid of, because it's, you know, some people have weird middle names that they don't like to use. That's hint, fair. Hint.
You?
No, you have a weird one.
Oh, I don't mind it. It's fine.
The first people to walk on the moon. Pretty amazing stuff. But here's the thing. You got to go all the way back to 1961, which is crazy that this happened in 9 years.
See, I Eight said years. The same thing. I have it written in my notes somewhere. How bananas is this? Yeah.
B-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-N-A-S. Bananas. That's
exactly.
It wasn't until 1961 that a person went to space on April 12th. Russian Yuri Gagarin became the first. Less than a month later, we were late to the space race. Alan Shepard became the first American in space. Following these milestones, President John F. Kennedy issued a challenge to the National Aeronautical and Space Administration, aka NASA, to put a human on the moon in 10 years or less. It was literally like a presidential challenge. It wasn't like some scientific reason. It was like Kennedy was like,
like the presidential fitness challenge.
Yeah, like the Arnold Schwarzenegger. Remember that back in the day?
Yeah.
Like it was just him saying, "Let's go to the moon." Like there was no like technological reason at the time. I'm sure there probably was, but it was basically Kennedy being like, "You know what? I feel like going to the moon."
Rank these things for Kennedy fame.
Okay.
Being assassinated. Marilyn Monroe getting us to the moon.
Marilyn assassination. Okay. Moon.
Yeah. All
right. Cause that's I never knew he was, I never knew he was the one that kind of did the, you know, apparently there was a famous speech.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do a really quick timeline and then we can jump into anything else. So, so this starts at 9:32 a.m. July 16th, Saturn V lifts off the Apollo 11 spacecraft into Earth's orbit. At 2:22, the third stage engine places the spacecraft into translunar trajectory. On July 16th at 2:47, the command module and Columbia space module separate from Saturn, third stage, and turn end over end, and they dock with Eagle, Saturn's in third stage. It swings around the moon on the far side of the moon. This is, they always talk about that in the movies when they had no communications. So this was, it took from the 16th to the 19th for this thing to get out of Earth's orbit and go around the moon. So it was 5:43 p.m. July 19th on the far side of the moon. The service module engine slows the spacecraft into lunar orbit. It slingshots. They do all the landing. They do all their stuff. Oh, I'm sorry. They don't do their landing. They just slingshot. So they went around the moon once. They come back around the Earth. They swing around, hit the moon again on July 20th, this is when it actually happened. So on July 20th, Eagle carrying Neil Armstrong, Edwin Aldrin separate and descend to the moon's surface, while Columbia carrying Michael Collins and the remainder remains in lunar orbit. 4:17, Eagle lands on the moon. This is PM on July 20th. 10:56, July 20th, Neil Armstrong steps on the moon. 11:15 PM, Aldrin steps on the moon. So he made him wait like, what is that, 20 minutes, 30 minutes? What
it's like, jerk. Okay, I didn't die. Come on out.
Yeah, the Martians didn't come, and it's not cheese.
It's not cheese.
1:11 a.m., July 21st, they get back into Eagle. They weren't there long. They planted the flag, grabbed a couple rocks.
Sure, planted.
Oh, geez, you're one of those. 1:56, Eagle ascends. It lifts off of the lunar surface. 5:35 p.m. July 21st, Eagle attaches lunar orbit or achieves lunar orbit and docks with Columbia. 7:41 p.m. July 21st, Neil Armstrong and Aldrin leave Eagle and jettison, and eventually on July 24th at 12:21 p.m., they jettison as they approach Earth, and at 12:35 p.m. July 24th, Columbia descends, parachuting, landing in the ocean.
Wow, that was a great time.
I didn't realize that they went around the moon.
I think I knew that, but never really thought about it.
Yeah, like they did it twice.
Yeah. So just a few things I wanted to call out, mostly for my own entertainment, I think. Let's see. Traveled 240,000 miles in 76 hours. That's pretty fast. Armstrong and Aldrin got to go, you know, hop around on the moon. And then Collins had to stay behind. Like, how do you feel if you're that guy, right? Like, well, I made it to the moon, but I didn't get to go stomp around. But they, when they descend into the onto the lunar surface, they landed on the southwestern edge, which was named the Sea of Tranquility.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how cool is that? That sounds like it's out of The Hobbit or something. That's cool, that's really what I wanted. So, you know, nerds came up with all of this, which is pretty great. And then after that, all of the information I ever know about space travel came thanks to Tom Hanks, Kevin Bacon, and the guy that died, Bill Paxton. Is that his name?
Bill's dead?
I think so.
Oh my goodness, when did Bill Paxton die?
I think he died a long time ago. Oh my goodness.
Ago. I'm going to be an emotional wreck the rest of the show.
You didn't know this?
Bill Paxton, he wasn't that old.
He was in
Twister.
He was
his famous movie,
the
Twisters.
2017.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, poor Bill.
Sorry about that, man.
Just ruined the show for me now.
I'm really sorry. That's what we got out of this. Well, that was a great timeline you ran through, Luke.
It's interesting. So if you're looking for it, all of my information came from memory. But if you're looking for it,
right, you wrote it down somewhere.
NASA's website has a great, you know, great timeline of all this stuff happening. So
I saw that, like, the Apollo program in general was, like, super costly. It involved an estimated 400,000 engineers, technicians, and scientists, and cost $24 billion, which is around $100 billion in today's money.
In today's money.
That's a couple. I mean, that's like almost podcast money.
And the crazy thing too is, like, it didn't start well.
No.
The program. No. So Apollo 1, January 27th, 1965. Kennedy, you know, Cape Kennedy, during the pre-flight test of Apollo 204 was the name of the rocket. The cabin caught fire and they couldn't escape. And Virgil, Edwin, and Roger, all the folks in the capsule died by being burned. Like, it's like that alone would be like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this, guys.
Maybe this,
like,
is a bad idea.
We're just doing a test and this thing is catching on fire.
Do you think as it was starting to not go well, they were like, hey, at least the president's dead. He's not holding us to this. Or, like,
well, interestingly, is that not a thought? I don't think that's a thought.
No,
but it goes from Apollo 1 to Apollo 7. So
a big old jump in the timeline there.
I feel like there may have been some other tragedies that happened in 2 through 6 that they're not telling us about. So there are a whole bunch of other Apollos that happened before we got to the moon. 7, they were supposed to demonstrate the command module. 8 was all about getting to the moon and back. 9, primary objective of 9 was with Earth's orbital engineering test. 10 was encompasses all aspects of the actual crew lunar landing except for the landing itself. And then obviously 11 happened. We just gave the timeline for that.
Yeah. Very good. All right. So before we continue on, it's time to take a break for a word from our sponsor.
Has to be NASA.
Thank you, NASA, for the big money.
I think
but
we're not allowed to say that.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think NASA listens. Noah S. wrote in and says, hey, dudes. Do you remember the show Hey Dude?
No,
that
I don't.
Might have been before your time. Hey, dudes. Pretty new listener here, but I have to say, y'all are awesome. I love the banter and the dope topics. Now, when he says dope, he means cool, Luke. He doesn't mean like meh.
I don't know what any of that means.
Okay. I am currently a welder and was thinking doing a podcast on a related topic might be cool. Also, I am planning to return to university, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on the emerging field of biomedical engineering. I'm confident I wrote back and said, heck yeah, that's what I would have gone into if it was really, you know, like a big thing back in the day when I was going to school. I fully support that. I think I'm convinced my niece is going to go for biomedical engineering when she grows up.
I would consider, though, with his with a background in welding, I would
just
stick with
welding and make a bunch of money.
I don't know. I got a nephew that does really well with welding. Uh-huh. But if I was going to go back and get an undergraduate degree, I'd probably keep it on the mechanical side because I think there's a lot of
Maybe like a manufacturing engineer.
Yeah, like you would be really in tune with like what is really happening when things are being made. So just
be one of those engineers people don't hate. Like you actually know what goes into the process versus me who's like, go make this. I don't see any problem.
Why can't you make it? What's which draft that has to come out? That has to come out of the mold.
Right. Next write in was from Sandy U. Hello. Hello, Sandy.
You think is this Sandy guy or Sandy girl?
It's Sandy U.
I work with a guy named Sandy, and one guy named Sandy, and I've worked with lots of women named Sandy, but I have met a guy named Sandy before.
I know some Sandy guys, yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
One Sandy guy. I have been enjoying your series on great engineering universities and would like to suggest adding Drexel University to the prestigious list. See, Sandy, Drexel doesn't make it because Luke and I have no chance of ever getting into such a place.
They don't even allow us on campus.
Then again, we could go to the MIT campus. We couldn't get in there, though. Sandy listed a pile of interesting facts about this, but this one's my favorite. So fun fact, the Drexel football team has been undefeated since 1973. That's because it's the last time they played. So a student improv group took the name and has been performing on campus since 2005. How about that? Yeah.
So that is a weird fun stat.
Yeah. Well, thank you for writing in, Sandy, as well as Noah. If any of you want to write in and tell us some fun facts about your university or give us some topics to cover, tell us what we got wrong about this whole landing on the moon thing, anything like that, go ahead and email us at unprofessionalengineering@gmail.com.
And don't forget to subscribe, like, share. We love the reviews. And as always, you can tell your smart devices to play the Unprofessional Engineering Podcast anytime. And make sure you stop by the Unprofessional Engineering store and buy something.
Oh, finally. Buy something. Buy an astronaut suit. Soon. Oh, my goodness. You're so old. I saw they just upped the amount that people are getting for Social Security because of inflation. Does that just mean I'm going to get
none
even more? Like, I was wondering that. Like, how can they up it yet they can't give me any?
Yeah, they keep saying it's going to run out, but let's make it bigger.
Yeah. All right. So moving on. The next thing I had was like, how did we get there? Like the methods of launching. What do you have?
So I have like the computer because that was obviously a big thing. I got the rockets,
rockets,
and then I got the spacesuit. So I can just kind of fill in however you want to start here.
All right. Let me just talk about, I guess, whatever I have written here. It's been a long time since we did this research.
Yeah, we did this research a while ago.
Yeah. Okay. So originally when they were trying to figure out how do we actually get this rocket from Earth to the moon, there were two main ideas or methods that they were working on to get to the moon and get back safely, of course. The first method was direct ascent. So this would have fired a three-man landing craft directly to and from the moon and was centered around NASA's design for a new super powerful Nova rocket. Probably the one I would have gone with, right?
Yeah.
Straight there, straight back, makes sense.
How hard could it be?
But there's smart people who think about this stuff, fortunately. The second was the Earth Orbit Rendezvous, EOR, which does sound cooler. This would have used smaller rockets to launch separate spacecrafts into Earth's orbit for assembly there and then subsequent boosting to the moon. Ultimately, though, Luke, they were like, no, both of these suck. And they rejected both of them. And an industrial engineer of all people, Tom Dolan, I think Tom Dolan might have been my sixth grade science teacher, but a different one. No, he was Mike. That was Mike Dolan. Proposed a third option, and that was the Lunar Orbit Rendezvous.
Mm-hmm.
So LOR, it would take three astronauts to the moon, but with just two transferring into a lander and descending to the moon's surface. And then Mr. Collins gets stuck behind, you know, watching everyone have the fun.
How mad would you be to be that guy?
So
that,
like, mad.
You get all the way to the moon and you're staying in like, you're like in the taxi. You're just waiting.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. You're the Uber driver waiting to like pick them up. So the smaller lander, the LEM, the lunar module, plus the CSM could be launched by a variant of existing Saturn-class rockets, so that's helpful, which was under the direction of Wernher von Braun. Do you all remember Wernher from our discussions on World War II?
I do remember Wernher von Braun.
Yeah, so if not, you know, check out our episode on that one. But anyways, the Lunar Orbit Rendezvous method was ultimately selected to go to the moon and back again because it was more achievable both financially and on the timeline that was set forward for them.
Can I talk about the rockets for a second?
Oh, heck yeah.
We're on rockets.
Yeah.
So the Saturn V started as a concept on a drawing board. It stood 363 feet tall and weighed 6.1 million pounds when it was fully fueled.
Getting excited, folks.
Each rocket would produce 1.5 million pounds of pow, thrust.
Of pow.
And consume 3 tons of fuel and oxidizer every second while it was firing. The five rockets making up the first stage of the Saturn V would propel Apollo spacecraft to an altitude of 36 miles at a speed of Mach 7.
That sounds fast.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So there was an issue, though. An investigation pointed out that the injector, this is a showerhead-like mixing tool that fed the fuel and the oxidizer through tiny little holes, imagine like a little showerhead, into the combustion chamber. It was having some issues and was messing up like the ratio. They had to optimize like spray pattern. So could you imagine trying to do all this without like CFD and like having like, I'm sure they could do calculations, but it had to be like build, test it to see what these were working like. So the problem was as soon as this ratio got unstable, it would just destroy the engine in a matter of seconds. It was just a chain reaction explosion. So it took them 18 months of testing, 78 hours of live engine testing before they actually dialed in what they needed to do. And the Saturn V flew 13 times during the Apollo program, that style of engine. And the F1 engine achieved a 100% reliability rating. Pretty cool.
That seems pretty good. Yeah.
I had on the rockets.
Well, I'm just thinking about, Buzz or any of these guys that go into any of these rockets and they're like, yeah, I have faith this is going to work. Like anything tiny goes wrong, done.
Yep.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah, you got to put could you imagine putting your trust in, I mean, not you and I, but
no,
people kind of like us, like engineers that, you know, like it's like, did you put that decimal place in the right spot kind of thing?
The whole units, the whole English or metric thing. Yeah. Yeah, that's terrible. So I had a little bit more information. I think we covered most of it, though. They hopped out this little tube. They got in their little rover, blah, 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 stuff like that. Real quick, though, I have a list of some things that I thought were interesting that came from the space program. Can we do that before our next
Please.
Break? All right. So first, freeze-dried food. So beef pot roast, lobster bisque, peach ambrosia. These are things that came from the space program in a nice plastic pouch, freeze-dried. Gross.
I don't know what peach ambrosia is, but it sounds
like, it sounds really good.
I love peach pie.
I do.
You a peach pie fan?
I do. Oh, I love peaches. Yeah. Cooling suits. NASA required rights to use, this one's really interesting, liquid cooling and ventilation garments in 1966. The skin tight suits had 300 feet of tubing snaking along the outside and running chilled water across the skin, pulling heat away from the astronauts' body and helping control their core temperatures. That's not the fun one. Various fireproof materials had to be used and created. Spring tires. This one's neat. They had to be super durable and stiff to support a vehicle, but squishy enough to roll over over rocks. And you can't get a flat tire. Also, they couldn't be so bad that you're like springing off into the zero Gs, right? Integrated circuits is another one. And this one makes me sad to mention. The Apollo spacecraft required light, compact, powerful computers. So NASA and MIT Instrumentation Labs made a daring decision. They built the Apollo guidance computer with promising but relatively unproven technology, the integrated circuit, and the rest is history.
I'll talk about that. I have a little bit more on computer later.
Yeah. You can go to spinoff.nasa.gov/database, and it has a database of all the inventions and whatnot that NASA kind of came up with throughout all of this. Now, before we continue on with you know, some more fun facts about the technology and other great things, let's take a break for this week's Luke's Rant.
So, again, a timely rant, like my previous rant. And this is, it's election season, James.
It is.
You and I, you know, we have our differences. I'm sure you and I have different political opinions, you know, one side of the aisle, or you do whatever.
I just give
side.
You my thing to fill out.
Oh,
ballot.
You do?
Yeah.
No, that's illegal.
Oh,
we
is it?
Don't do that. I'm fairly certain you go to jail for that. And, you know, make sure you go out and vote. Whoever you vote for, it's your kind of thing. But the emails. I haven't got a text yet. Apparently,
oh,
they got
really?
Your number.
I get texts but like every day.
This is literally like the time of year where like I don't want to look at the TV. I don't want to go on the internet. And in your case, like you don't even want to look at your phone because all you do, like my phone is ringing off the hook. There's people.
Yeah,
can't
oh goodness, yeah.
I'm getting flyers in my door.
I'll get so many. Yeah.
So I just and then James and I were talking before the show, and he's like, "Yeah, your text is gonna swing me. I'm going to vote for yes. XYZ because you sent me a text telling me that I should." It's like, no.
And it's like no value. It's, hey, remember to go vote for fill in the blank
yeah,
person
like,
on this day. Yeah, I got it. Thanks.
It's like, give like some, you know, political thing that you think I care about and tell me what
right.
that person's stance is on it. And then maybe I'll change my mind if I
right?
was thinking about the other person. And I don't know about you, but, you know, you and I are like, we're not terribly different ages.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, I'll be generous and say we're close.
But the political environment and like the ads and how bad they are.
Oh yeah.
It is.
Oh yeah.
It is by far the worst I've ever seen ever. And this isn't even a presidential election. This is just midterms. Like I can't imagine what this is going to be like. And like, I remember back when I was a kid, it was just like, they were nice to each other. They never really talked about the other candidate too much. They kind of talked about what they wanted to do. And now it's the opposite. You never talk about what you want to do. I just point out all your shortcomings and all the things, all your skeletons. And it's
imagine if that was us. Like, we should run for something just to see all the dirt people get on us.
Yeah,
oh, buddy.
I got a couple states I'm not allowed in. I don't know if that would work.
Oh,
well, not
goodness.
A state, an area in a state. I got a couple of those. Sorry. All righty. So
do you ever get the like text or like phone messages that are like, there's a warrant out for your
arrest in
whatever county? And I'm like, I actually will take a moment and be like, now what did I do there? That
yeah. Every now and then I'm like, yeah. I was in Maryland.
How long ago was that? Yeah.
Okay.
All right, moving on.
Right before my rant, we were talking about the suits. This is so interesting. This is like the most interesting thing I thought.
Okay.
So I got a whole section here. So eight companies entered the competition.
Oh, this is the best. This is the best.
And the surprise winner was International Latex Company, which proposed a simple design with flexible rubber joints. Its famous products was Playtex women's undergarments.
Yeah, so, it was the company that gave you the cross your heart bra in the 1960s.
So so engineers came up with a rebreathing system. So this is all in the suit. So this is all connected. So they come up with this rebreathing system where lithium hydroxide filters reacted with the exhaled CO2, and it would make the lithium carbonate and water while oxygen passed through the filters and was recycled. This reduced oxygen consumption by like 20%. So those little packs they wore. Interestingly, NASA rejected the very first spacesuits because they were bulky, heavy, and they weren't flexible. The suits also failed like some major tests. I mean, you're in space. These things can't fail.
Yeah.
So one of the tests was they
imagine if you get to the moon, you get out there, and the reason you die is because your Playtex spacesuit failed. Oh my goodness.
So one of the tests was they had to fall on their backs and be able to get back up. And apparently these spacesuits, so they totally scrapped the contract. And the problem was, so Playtex came in and they got partnered up with another company that was an engineering company, and they were the ones that kind of ruined the whole thing, like this other company. So again, they opened up another contract. And this time, the company, the same company got it again. The new suits were water cooled. You talked about that. They had a pressurized inner suit that had flexible joints. The outer nylon garments protected against temperature, their extremities. Micrometeorites. Could you imagine having to worry about micrometeorites? Yeah. The suits tested. They did really well. They passed all the requirements and ready for flight. The Apollo 1 fire, which killed three of the astronauts during, prompted another redesign. So none of these suits, the first run, were not non-flammable material. So following the incident, NASA mandated that the removal of all flammable materials from the spacecraft and the suits. So in the spacecraft, other than, you know, the fuel, there is nothing flammable after Apollo 1. They reached out to some fabric technology experts and found that a material called beta cloth, it was tightly woven silica fibers and Teflon, made the outer shell. And the A7LB spacesuit was the name of the final one that was certified for flight.
Very cool. Did you see that they kind of won the contract when they were like pitching themselves, and they were like, you know, we are very familiar with garments that have to be form-fitting and flexible. Like, it's fantastic. Anything else about the suits?
No, nothing on the suits. I got a little bit more on the computer if we want to go to that, unless you had other stuff.
Real quick on the tires, I mentioned how they were kind of springy, etc. These were made by Goodyear. They came up with the idea. So go check out our episode on Goodyear if you haven't. But they were kind of like this very fine mesh, right? That was able to handle the abrasive lunar surface. But the mesh was made of piano wire for durability and flexibility and stability. And it was like this zinc-coated piano wire that was hand-cut and hand-woven into a mesh to design this stuff. Each tire required 3,000 feet of piano wire, which is just crazy town. Okay, computers.
Computer. So NASA awarded the first computer contract for the Moonshot program, it was originally called. Not for the rockets or the spacecraft, but the guidance and control system. Because, I mean, obviously, you know, you put a couple firecrackers under something, pew, send it to the moon, that's pretty easy. But you got to be able to point and do calculations. Yeah.
Anyone
and stuff
could
like
do that.
Yeah. So you mentioned it. The contract was MIT Instrument Laboratory. It was a research arm of the university. The plan was to use a basketball-sized inertia measurement unit. So this was basically like a gyroscope. It was something that would be able to tell, you know, up, down, left, right, backwards, forwards, acceleration, that sort of thing. There were three gyroscopes mounted perpendicularly, each to measure the change in direction, three accelerometers to measure the change in velocity. The real unknown, though, was how to build the computer the astronauts would use to interface with the IMU, the inertial measurement unit, because they had this unit, but they didn't have a computer that connected to it. And then this where, like, all of these things, you know, started to happen. So the most compact advanced digital computers were literally enough to fill a room. So Dick Batlin, lab's technical director, conferred with his colleagues and said, how much space do we have? Knowing that existing computers are like the size of a room. He said, you got about a cubic foot. that was the build spec that they had. So the Apollo guidance computer was one of the first to use integrated circuits. Mm-hmm. The ACG guided the Apollo to the moon had a memory capacity of only 72 kilobytes, mostly composed of copper wires woven in specific patterns. Raytheon, which assembled the Apollo guidance computer, had a team of expert seamstresses who threaded the wires through magnetic rings to create memory. Like, they were actually weaving memory through magnets with wire to create like a bit of memory, which is, this is crazy town that, like, I don't know how they did this. I think it was fake. I'm just saying, you know, I'm a flat earther. You know me.
I know you are. That's not accurate.
No.
72 kilobytes of ROM, so read-only memory. That's pretty impressive.
I got 256 in my phone.
Yeah. Typical phones have like 4 gig of RAM at this time. That's like more than 1 million times more memory than an Apollo computer had. Like, it's just so asinine. The Apollo 11 computer had a processor which ran at 0.043 megahertz. An iPhone processor, give or take, typically runs about 2,490 megahertz. It just hurts my brain hole. So you did mention that you think the landing is fake.
Oh, completely.
I have a whole section on that, but I'm thinking maybe we just do an episode on how we faked the moon landing, because we're kind of at time and I don't want to like go too far over. And I think there's enough to make an episode.
Yes, definitely. Because I mean, it didn't happen. So I could definitely, you know, provide more intel.
Yeah, perfect. And I know you know a lot about faking the moon landing. But before we do end, I wanted to talk about why NASA wants to go back to the moon now.
For cheese.
It's for cheese. We've run out of Swiss and we need to go get more, which is another conspiracy, right? Oh, yeah. I bet the Swiss make that cheese. No, it comes from the moon, stupid. Yep. One is a long running desire to get humans to Mars. And the Artemis mission will test some of the technology and logistics required to do that. Totally makes sense. A mission to the moon also has scientific value. So rocks collected from previous missions have revealed a lot about the moon's origin. It likely formed from debris after an object the size of Mars smashed into Earth more than 4 billion years ago. So there's, you know, that's something you can learn. And then in the Artemis missions, NASA is especially interested in studying ice in lunar craters. Depending on how long it's been there, the ice and its characteristics could provide history to our solar system. But the ice could also be used to establish a permanent base on the moon, a moon base, if you would say. And it could be turned into drinking water, oxygen, or even spacecraft fuel for us to kind of land as like a little stopping point on the moon, you know, have a little holiday and then take back off to Mars on the way.
Based off of every movie I've ever seen, like you never want
to go wrong there.
Nothing can go wrong. I mean, you're not like a microscopic alien organism isn't going to go inside your body. And then you.
Speaking of Luke, for those of you who like to read. Project Hail Mary is a book that I've started. So I finished the Witcher series,
okay,
which is all swords and magic and all of that stuff. And that's all I read or watch or do in my life.
Okay.
And so my wife said, no, you have to read this book. It's all about space travel and science and engineering. It's really rather interesting. So if you haven't checked it out, check out Project Hail Mary. It is James recommended for my read list.
And join the book club. Use our Amazon affiliate link somewhere.
Oh, we should do that. If we had one of those. A book club. Yeah. Like, I just recommend the same book every episode because I don't actually read. Yeah. Anything else for you, Luke?
That's all I got. This is good. I like the idea of saving the fact that the moon landing was fake for another episode.
Yeah, I think that'll be
a good one. We might need to do two episodes for that.
That'll be our most listened to for sure. If any of you want to tell us how the moon landing was faked, if you want to tell me how much you love Project Hail Mary, if anything like that, you just want to say hi because I'm a pretty nice guy. I'll get back to your email in a few months. Go ahead and email me at unprofessionalengineering@gmail.com. And until next time.
See ya.
Welcome to Super Typical Mega Bank. How can we disappoint you today?
Hi, I'd like to open an account.
May I pressure you into considering a pro disadvantage, high regret, impersonal, everyday inconvenient savings plan with added compound and confusion at no additional discount or apology? It's one of our top disappointers.
I feel so...
disappointed?
Yeah.
Another unsatisfied customer. Next!
If your bank makes you feel like this, it's time you talk to us. Connect First Credit Union. Bank on a brighter future.